For those of you who don't know me, my name is John. I'm part of the site team here in Bognor. I'm married to Becky, who's out with the youth at the moment. We've got two tearaway of children called Jude and Caleb. It's great to be with you this morning. If you're new or visiting or you've been here a long time, it's great to see you this morning. Okay, we've been working through a series called Never the Same Again. And looking at how people in the Bible meet Jesus and their lives are surprisingly titled Never the Same Again. And today, instead of looking at just one person, they thought, you know what, John's preaching, so we'll give him a challenge. We're going to look at three people today. So we're going to look at a family unit. We're going to look at a group of people. We're going to look at Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Now, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were all siblings. They were from a family unit in a place called Bethany, just outside of Jerusalem. And in particular, we're going to look at their encounters with Jesus. And we're going to be looking at Jesus' actions in their encounters. And the way he responds to them were often really surprising. That they weren't quite what you'd expect him to how to respond. So we're going to be looking at times when God surprises us and what we do with that this morning. So I can certainly think of lots of times God has surprised me in my own life where his actions haven't been what I was expecting. Now, I've lived in Bognor for 5 years, well, 5.5 years, and to be honest, Bognor is a place I never thought I would live. Your laughter kind of makes me think you thought the same. In a recent survey in the Telegraph, Bognor was voted the worst seaside town in the UK. Come on, Bognor. Yeah, worst seaside town in the UK, receiving, get this is how much we got percentage-wise, 47% in the criteria. Joint bottom with Clacton-on-Sea. Yeah, that's where we stand in Bognor. However, on paper, there is very little going for Bognor. But then God surprised me. When this site started up, all of a sudden, I felt like I couldn't live anywhere else. I had and still have a passion for the crazy bunch of people that live in Bognor and the weird town that this is. It is weird. I never expected to live in Bognor Regis, but then God surprised me. I always thought that when I became a parent, I would have, I love sport. I thought when I become a parent, I'll have boys that love sport, and that's all we'll do. We'll be outside playing sport all the time. But then my boys would rather play with trains than a ball. I was not expecting ever to know this much about trains. Not knowing that, knowing how the internal workings of a steam engine works, and I can name far too many Thomas trains that I never wanted to have to name. Like, there's one called Hero. Who knew that? Not me. Hero. I'm still learning. The amount of times Jude has said to me when we have gone to Blueberry Road, I'm like, Jude, look at this train. He's like, no, Daddy, that's a locomotive. Apparently there's a difference. I didn't know this. And God surprised me in doing that. I never thought I would have what I would have deemed growing up geeks for children. We used to bully my uncle because he had a model railway set in his loft and he was the weird uncle. That's my children. God surprised me in doing that. Those two are fairly silly examples. And most of the time when God surprises us, it's not quite like that. I always thought that I'd be teaching PE as a career. I thought that having trained in it, I went to university, trained to be a PE teacher, and I loved teaching it. And then I got a job, I got a promotion, became head of PE, and I got depression. And the job I loved, I didn't love. I wasn't expecting to have a mental illness, but God surprised me in that. And if you've been a Christian for 5 minutes, or even if you believe in God in some way, then you will have been surprised by him and his actions at some point. I want to look this morning at what we do in those moments and how we can work through times when life isn't working out as we expected it. When God isn't intervening in the way we want or expect him to. And as we look at the encounters that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus had with Jesus, I think it would be fair to say Jesus' actions are at least a bit surprising and not how people might expect Jesus to act. So we're going to be reading from John 11 today. I warn you, it is a reasonably long passage, and we are reading it all, 44 verses. Right, if you're not sick of my voice by now, you will be at the end of 44 verses. Okay. I will forget to click on, Linda, so if you could do it for me, thank you. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was someone who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, yet you are going back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees the world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, will he not get better?" Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe in him, but let us go to him." Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would have lived. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in resurrection at the last day." And Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world." And after she had said this, she went back and called for her sister, Mary. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of a blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across its entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took the stone away. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have always heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you have sent me." When he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Okay, thanks. Mary and Martha and Lazarus all had their own encounters with Jesus in that passage. And like I said, I think Jesus acts proper weirdly. He's really surprising, and throughout the extract, it's just another surprising thing after another surprising thing. So let's look at some of the surprising things he does. And when you think about it, it's not often what we might expect. So the first one is in verse 4, and is perhaps the strangest one. Jesus says to his disciples, "This sickness will not end in death." And then a few verses later, Lazarus is dead. It certainly looks like sickness has ended in death. But ultimately, sickness doesn't end in death. Death is in the story, but it's not the end. Resurrection is the end. But if you put yourself in the disciples' shoes, they're going to take that to mean that Lazarus isn't going to die, so don't worry about it. And then he dies. So they're going to be there questioning Jesus. But Jesus, you said sickness wasn't going to end in death. Lazarus is now dead. Jesus' actions and words would have surprised the disciples. In verse 6, this is my favourite one. In verse 6, you get this interesting sentence where it says that after Jesus had heard about Lazarus' illness, he decided to stay where he was. He didn't go to Lazarus, but despite the fact he loved him, he stayed there because he loved him. When my granddad was sick and on death's door, I practically ran to the hospital to see him. You know, it was my chance to see my granddad when he was ill. I wanted to be there to comfort him, to comfort my grandma. But Jesus stays there for 2 days. Not 2 hours, 2 days. Well, we can think, well, if you love someone, then you go to them when they're ill. But Jesus displays his love in a somewhat unusual way. By not going to him, but staying where he was. It's surprising behavior, and not what his disciples would have expected. By verse 8, when Jesus is ready to go to Lazarus in Bethany, which is in Judea, Jesus has decided that now is the time to go back. And that surprises his disciples. They go, "No, don't go back now. Don't you forget when you were there, some people tried to kill you? Let's, lay low for a little bit. People are trying to kill us. Let's keep doing that loving Lazarus thing by not doing anything and staying where we are." Again, Jesus' followers can't keep up with Jesus and his surprising behavior. In verse 11, Jesus prophetically announces that Lazarus is actually already dead. He actually says he's fallen asleep, which again, his disciples get confused about, and he's surprised by Jesus' language. Not only goes to clarify, but he also says Lazarus is dead. Just makes it more surprising. If he's dead and you know that, why didn't you wait to do something sooner? Remember, we read this story with the benefit of hindsight. We know the ending of the story. We know that Lazarus is brought out of the tomb. The disciples didn't know that. And then we have... And then, in having the benefit of hindsight, the fact that Jesus weeps can also strike us as strange. We know the ending of the story, and Jesus is clear. He also knows the end of the story by saying it will end in resurrection. So why does he weep with them about Lazarus' death when he knows he's going to bring him back? Why not just get on with it, do the resurrection? Why is he so moved when he knows what's going to happen? And then he asks the people who are gathered to take the stone away in verse 39. Why doesn't he just move it himself? If he knows he's about to demonstrate great power by bringing someone out of the tomb, he could, do some Star Wars... And the stone goes flying. That'd be awesome if he's going to demonstrate power. But he asked them to move it. Jesus' words and actions are often surprising in this passage. And this doesn't actually mention the other encounter with Mary and Martha, where on that occasion, Jesus went round the house and Mary comes and sits at Jesus' feet, and Martha's there working hard, making everything right, as you do when you've got a guest. And Martha says to Jesus, kind of understandably, "Have a word, Jesus. Tell her to do some work. Come on." And Jesus goes, "No. She's doing the right thing. If I'm going to rebuke anyone, it's you, Martha. This is what you should be doing." Again, Jesus' actions, especially with his family, are really surprising. And it's the same with us. Jesus works in surprising and unexpected ways. Jesus is God himself. And God still acts in surprising ways with us. It could be, you know, you might be surprised by God and his actions right now. Something is going on that you just don't understand. And you're trying to see God in it and you can't. And you can't quite figure out why he's letting this thing happen to you or to the person you love. And you keep praying into it and you aren't getting any answers. Or at least not the answer you want. It could be a relationship which is not working out how you hoped. Even a marriage or a relationship with your parents. You could be living with illness every day that continues to surprise. That could be physical or mental or emotional, but it's the cause of a lot of questions. You could be in the midst of a bereavement, or your career might not be working out like how you'd want it, or you just can't break out of debt, or someone you love is really suffering. At some point, we all get surprised by God and his actions, and we have cause to question God. If you aren't right now, then there certainly will be people who are struggling and confused and surprised by God that you could show love and support to. Let me be clear and honest from the off. There are some things we don't know in times like this, and we rarely get the answers to them. This is why they're called surprises, I suppose. You don't get an answer to a surprise. If it wasn't a surprise, you'd know why it was coming. We often don't know why at all. Why does this thing need to happen? We might have some big and general answers, but not necessarily specific answers. The other thing we don't know is, well, why am I depressed in my work situation? Why did God do that thing to me? Why did I get depressed in my work situation? It might be, why did my relationship have to end like that? Why do I have to live with this illness? Sometimes we might get answers later on, and we might realize that it was never the right job for us, or never the right relationship for us. But why let it happen at all then? The next one we don't know is, why me? Why did I have depression and not someone else? Or whatever it is for you. Why did I have to go through this? Why does my parent have to die younger than most other people's? And why now? Sometimes it can be like God's timing is somewhat questionable. Does this really have to happen right now? Everything's going fine. Or I might have loads on my plate. Why more? Well, these are some things that we just don't know. And we might never get an answer to. But Jesus is certainly surprising at points in this passage we're looking at. And there's also a lot that can help us with when we're working through these times when God is surprising in our life. I have three things that we do know from this passage. We don't know why these happen, but we do know three things. And they're important for us to hold on to when we have questions about God and why he's surprising in letting things go on around us that aren't what we want. And that's what we're going to look at. Firstly, while we don't know what God is doing, we know that God knows what he's doing. At risk of sounding totally and blindingly oblivious, obvious even, not oblivious. The truth is, God knows things, we don't. I do feel like it's super obvious to say, but it's worth saying. Throughout the story, Jesus remains in total control of the whole situation. He knows what is happening and what is going to happen in a way no one else does. Mary and Martha, in particular, don't know that Lazarus is going to be raised. While Jesus does kind of tell the disciples, he doesn't tell, for some reason, doesn't tell Mary and Martha that that's going to happen. He knows things that they don't and doesn't tell them. But he does know. Both the sisters say to Jesus, "If you had only been here, our brother wouldn't have died." That is an amazing statement of faith in Jesus that they're making. But it also carries with it the undertone of, why weren't you here? How have you let this happen to our brother? And as we read it, knowing what's going to happen, but they didn't, they're in the midst of some deep and serious questions and confusions over how Jesus acted, just as many of us are right now. All they know is their brother has just died. They know that Jesus knew he was dying and that Jesus could have done something to stop it, but he didn't. In January 2017, just after my youngest son Caleb had been born, I started a new job as head of PE. And then I developed depression lasting about a year and a half until West Point last year. On that, if you haven't booked into West Point, do. It's amazing. During this time, Becky and I, in that year and a half, had our fair share of questions for God. And in many ways, still have those questions for God. All those things we don't know. Why did it have to happen at all? Like Mary and Martha, I know God knew all about it. But why me? You know, I know he could have stopped it at any point, and he eventually did, but why didn't he do it earlier? Why did I have to have depression at all? We asked, why me? We asked, why us? We asked, why now? Caleb's only a month old. I'd had a new promotion. I'd had a new job, a promotion. I knew God had provided that job. So how was this helpful? And we still don't actually have the answer to a lot of these questions. But I still don't know why it happens at all, why it happened to happen to me and us, or why it happened when we were stepping out in what we felt God was calling us as a family to do. I don't know why some people get ill and some don't. Why some people die from cancer and some don't. I don't know why me and not someone else. I don't know why you and not someone else. And I don't know because the Bible doesn't give me a direct, explicit answer to those questions. It doesn't tell me why at all. It doesn't tell me why me, why now. But one thing this passage does tell me, and the Bible tells me countless other times, and what it tells you is that God does know. He knows that you are ill, and he knows why you are ill, even if you don't or never could. And he has a plan for our lives, just like he had a plan in this passage. And he decides whether we need to know the plan or not. Most of the time we don't, just like Mary and Martha didn't. God knows things we don't. Things surprise us a lot. But there's nothing, nothing that surprises him. Nothing whatsoever. God knows things we don't, ultimately, because he is bigger than us. Again, pretty obvious. Maybe, but it's still important for us to get. This is probably the most common way God answers questions of suffering in the Bible. He reminds us that he is God and we aren't. If you ever want to feel better about your situation, read the back end of Job. So Job's had everything stripped from him, his family, his health, his position. And then at the end, God goes, "Where were you when I created the heavens and the earth?" And you're just like, you can feel Job just getting smaller and smaller, going, "Okay, yeah, I realize where I am in relation to you." Isaiah 55, verse 8 to 9 says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are your thoughts." God is different to us, and he works differently to how we think. The way he does things are different to the way we do things. In fact, we're not even close to the way he does things. The distance between heaven and earth is the same distance between his ways and our ways. They are so far apart. To put it into context, because otherwise it can come across a bit heavy, my thoughts are higher than my kids' thoughts, or so I'm told. Okay? My methods of getting things done are different to their ways. As I said, I have two rowdy boys who love to bundle and play rough. If I lie down anywhere in the house, you can guarantee within about 30 seconds, one of them will shout, "Bundle," and I'll get hit. And sometimes that's okay. It's okay to have a bundle with each other. That's fine. Sometimes it's not okay. You can't just rugby tackle your brother to the floor because he has the toy you want, because he won't listen to you. And I have to tell him off. And I have to sit them on the stairs. And this doesn't go down very well with my children. I don't necessarily like doing it either because I love a bundle. Don't lie down. I love a bundle, but it's necessary. It's right and necessary that I have to teach them what is right and necessary. And this causes genuine and real sadness for my boys and confusion. They generally can't understand why they can't just have one more chance, or why can I do it then but not now, and why does Dad have to be unnecessarily cruel and sit me on the stairs? All I did was take him out. But my thoughts are higher than their thoughts. And while I understand it, that doesn't make their suffering or confusion any less real. They are still on the spot on the stairs crying and feeling pain. And it doesn't mean they are unlikely to understand it in that moment. But the difference between me and my two-year-old are not nearly as big as the difference between me and God. That I understand why I'm doing it. The boys might not. Hopefully over time they may. In terms of us and God, I think it's surprisingly easy to forget. I think we should be able to know what God is doing and why all the time. And in one sense, that makes sense. I get that. I'll read that again. In terms of us and God, I think it's surprising and easy for us to forget. We think we should always know why God, what he's doing, and, you know, why all the time. And in one sense, I get that, and it makes the same, but who do we think we are in context? If we think about how big he is compared to us, why should I know? God is so much bigger than us, and he operates on an entirely different level to us. There will always be some unanswered questions that we have, or at least answers that we can't really understand or accept. But that shouldn't really surprise us. Why should we ever think that we should be able to understand God and all his ways? He knows what we need more than we know ourselves. Even when we really want it and think that it would really help us, it might not be what we need. Crucially, though, the fact that God is much bigger than us and so different to us in many ways does not mean that he is distant from us. The second thing we need to know from this passage, and it clearly shows us that God seriously loves us. Mary and Martha are devastated by the death of their brother, understandably. They are deeply moved and they don't totally understand Jesus' thoughts or his ways, and they're weeping. One of the beautiful ways we see Jesus isn't distant in this passage, but seriously loves us, is before anything else, when Jesus has gone to Judea, he says, it says in verse 33, when Jesus saw Mary weeping. What a statement. God sees our weeping. He doesn't just ignore it. He sees its weeping. He is higher than us, and he does things that we don't understand, and he lets things happen which make us weep. But that doesn't mean he's disinterested. That doesn't mean he switches off in our sorrow. Just like me with my boys, my way is higher than theirs, but that doesn't mean I don't see their weeping and I don't care. We know that God sees our weeping. And it's worth to note that Jesus certainly doesn't tell Mary and Martha to stop weeping. Jesus never tells, and God never tells us to not to weep. He never tells us not to be sad, or that we shouldn't find something hard to process and work through if we do. But he does see us in our sadness, and he seriously loves us. Weeping doesn't come naturally to us Brits. Certainly doesn't come naturally to me. Weeping and lamenting is a lost art. In many cultures today, when someone dies, those who have experienced loss are expected to process their pain loudly, corporately, articulately, publicly, and perhaps musically, a noisy, guttural, wet, salty lament is widely acknowledged to be the best way to handle the emotion of the moment. But culturally, we struggle with it. At the start of this year, when my granddad died, at his funeral, my mum played the piano. She was the worship leader of the church he was in, the only worship leader, so it was her playing or nothing. So she played, and she was fine. She'd done really well through three songs and got to the last one. Then halfway through the song, Blessed Assurance, tears, snot, like, it was gruesome. Everything started sobbing. She stopped singing the song, just about managed to carry on playing. And at no point would anyone have stood up and gone, stop that crying! You're not allowed to cry or lament over the death that has happened. And God doesn't do that either. He sees your weeping and does not tell you to stop. But he loves you. If you're surprised by God right now and in a season of weeping, or whether you're actually physically weeping, or you feel like weeping, or you're like me and you've suppressed your weeping, then there's two things for you. Firstly, lamenting does help. Whether you are wired to a natural weeper or not, lamenting helps. And secondly, it gets a lot easier. God may have surprised you so much that you might feel like right now you don't know how to get through the day. And I've had days like that gone past, let alone the week or the year. But it won't always be like that. Your old dreams you had die and your new ones come. Jesus doesn't just see Mary weeping, but he's deeply moved by her weeping. God is deeply moved by our weeping. The love of Jesus is never in question in this passage. Maybe his methods are, but not his love. In fact, it is because God loves us that we ask questions of him. If you love us, why is this happening? We do know that you seriously love us, but why is all this surprising stuff happening to me? Well, in the C.S. Lewis book, The Magician's Nephew, the main character is a boy called Diggory, and he asks Aslan, the lion, to heal his sick mother who's dying. Initially, Aslan doesn't do anything, and then Diggory desperately pleads with him again, and as Diggory is weeping, he is then surprised by Aslan, and it says this. Up till then, Diggory had been looking at the lion's great feet and huge claws on them. Now, in despair, he looked up at its face. What he saw surprised him as much as anything in his whole life, for the tawny face was bent down near his own, and, wonder of wonders, great shining tears stood in the lion's eyes. They were such big, bright tears compared to Digory's own that for a moment he felt as if the lion really must have been sorrier about his mother than he was himself. We worship a crying God. In one sense, it seems strange that Jesus weeps with Mary and Martha when he knows the outcome. But he knows the outcome of all our situations, and even so, he weeps with us through our trials and through our surprises. And that is perhaps the most surprising thing of all. The Creator of all things is so genuinely moved by our real sorrows and struggles that he weeps with us. God seriously loves you. And when you're really bothered by something, he's bothered by it too. Jesus doesn't come in and try and make it better by jumping to conclusions or saying something like, you know, well, at least every cloud has a silver lining. Or, yeah, you can always look on the bright side of life, you're still alive. No, he gets down with them. He comes alongside us and says, I'm sorry to hear about that. And he weeps with us. We can do this with one another when we're struggling too. We just come alongside each other and we weep together. We don't try and fix it. Trying to fix it straight away when someone gets a big surprise in their life, causing them to lament, is sometimes some of the worst thing you can do. Let's be like Jesus and just care for one another when others, and others as well. And let's weep with each other. Okay, and lastly, thirdly, we know that our response is to believe in him. We know that God is bigger, and we know that he seriously loves us. And in terms of that, we also know and we can see that our response is to believe in him. That's not to say that we need to understand everything, and by means, or even we need to know that we're okay everything. It means that even with these questions, and when we don't understand things, we choose to believe in Jesus and trust God. To believe that Jesus is to believe is what Jesus is repeatedly telling people to do in this passage. He says to Martha, the one who believes in me will live even though they die. And then he asks her, do you believe this? He doesn't ask if she understands. He asks if she believes, though through her lack of understanding. Despite the seriously amazing miracle that he's worked through Lazarus, I'm still not sure that Lazarus himself would have ever got to the point of getting the answers for why all those things had to happen to him. Just like we don't get the answers, particularly the why me. As a result of this story we've read this morning, Lazarus then had a price on his head for the rest of his life because just for being alive. The whole town went and mourned with Mary and Martha. They knew he was dead. He was then evidence for Jesus' miracles for the rest of his life, just for being alive. God, what's the point? Certainly God worked in Lazarus' life, and that would have been some story to tell in hindsight. He would have looked back and gone, you know, seen God moving in every movement, but he probably wouldn't have been able to see it while he was dying. But would he have said it was worth it? You may know someone, or you may be someone, who has been through a very difficult time and has come out the other end knowing God so much better and believing in him so much more for it. Maybe you've been through cancer or something, and ultimately it taught you more about God's love than anything else you've ever been through. So in a sense, you're grateful for the cancer, but it doesn't mean you're glad you had cancer. You still think, well, couldn't have God done it another way? The important thing is that we are brought to a place where we believe in him and we trust in him however many questions we still have. And we believe in him because while we don't know what he's doing, he does. He is bigger than us and he seriously loves us. We might not get the same solution that Lazarus got. Most people we love die and stay dead. They don't walk out of the grave. But we trust God even when we don't get the results we want and are desperately praying for, because we know he's bigger than us and we know he loves us. And as we believe in him and trust him, that brings glory to his name. As we've said, normally God doesn't tell us why sick people get sick. But actually in this story, he does. He tells the disciples, and he kind of gives two reasons. In verse 4, he says, the sickness is for God's glory. So that's why Lazarus got sick, because he was going to be raised, and that would be for God's glory. But then he says in verses 14 and 15, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there. Why did Jesus let him die? So that you may believe. There is a clear link between us believing and him being glorified. And while the raising of Lazarus clearly glorifies God in and of itself, and it also works as a means to an end, the faith that results in the whole of the Bethany family and the disciples glorifies God. And that's the ultimate end. God is glorified. When we believe in God more, we want to glorify God more, whether that belief or faith is through rejoicing and winning or through weeping and losing. Really, whatever we are going through, God is always that God. Whatever we are going through, the goal is always that God is glorified. And while it may be going through something or being surprised by something, we are very welcome to find that difficult and to weep through that struggle, but we find delight in the God who weeps alongside us. We delight in the one who is bigger than us, the one who is bigger than our situation, the one who loves us. And as we delight in him and believe in him, he is so honored. The reality is that when someone goes through cancer and says, I trust and delight in God, God is enough, that glorifies God way more than someone who's just got a new Porsche and says, I trust and delight in God. So the response for every one of us when God surprises us and when we go through things that we never expected to go through is to believe in him. Maybe you're not yet a Christian this morning and you're not sure if you are, or you've been, and you might have been, feel like you've been surprised by God. You might not even be sure he's real, but if he is, you know that you don't understand. You know you don't understand him and his ways. Well, let me encourage you that if you believe in him this morning, not because I say so, but because even though you don't know what he is doing and what he's playing at, He does know, and he is totally in control. Nothing surprises him. Not only does he know, but he seriously loves you. He weeps with you and cares about you infinitely more than you or I know. And he calls you to himself to believe in him, even in the midst of your questions. The other thing I know is that every one of us needs an encounter with Jesus. Again, we all have questions, but the truth is, Jesus doesn't provide the answer. Jesus is the answer. Jesus is generally not that interested in providing you with answers outside of himself. He's way more interested in telling you what you really need to know, which is that you just need more of him. Life can be tough. There's no denying it. But that doesn't mean there is no hope. Jesus is the hope. And the answer, and the resurrection. It all looked bleak for Mary and Martha when their brother had been dead for 4 days, but Jesus changes things. He is the hope and the resurrection, and the end of the story is life, not death. Just as for Lazarus, for those who believe in Jesus, your life will not end in death. Death, both physically and metaphorically, will play a part in your life. But it will not be the end. Hope will be the end. I've said it before, and I've said it again, the comfort we really need when we have questions comes not from the what, but from the who. The comfort is in the who and not the what. The one who knows the answers, even if we don't, is the one that is in control, and that he seriously loves you. If the band could come up. That's our takeaway. I'm going to say it again. The one that knows the answers, even if we don't, is the one that's in control, and he seriously loves you. So I'm going to, if we can, we're going to respond in three ways in a minute. We'll offer some prayer, maybe some weeping at the back. I'll try my best. So if we could stand up, we're going to respond by it. Let's believe in him, even though we might still have questions. We might still be there going, why God, why? But let's believe in him through that. Let's give praise to him as our response. We're probably going to go over time, but I'm sure God will be fine with that. So I'm going to hand over to Alice. He's going to lead us.